Welcome back, everyone. Dr. B here. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Ask the Dentist. It is Women's History Month. And besides that, you know, of course, that is very, very important. But when it comes to women's health, we all know that women's health is kind of second. It's on the bench. It's on a varsity team. All the information is out there on the field. And sitting on the bench are very important studies, very important information about women. In fact, another problem is that a lot of studies are geared or biased towards men and their hormonal makeup and metabolic differences. Men and women are different physically and certainly in many other areas as well. We were designed to do two different things. One of my favorite moments that just sticks in my mind. It was a long time ago. I took my staff to a motivational seminar. It was in San Jose. And, we normally didn't do that, but I thought it would be fun. I had the opportunity to do so. And his name was Zig Ziglar. What a great stage name, right? Most of you don't know who he is. I'll try and put a link in the show notes. Let me make a note of that. He was one of the great motivational speakers not even of my time. He was before my time, you know, kind of a post-Dale Carnegie kind of guy, Zig Ziglar. And he said something. I was in the front row. That was before I had treated my sleep apnea. I was kind of dozing off. I remember a hard right front row. My staff was with me. They were very interested. They were enjoying it because he was quite a personality. He talked about his five marriages, I think, and that's probably where I started dozing off. But he said something very interesting, and this is regarding the difference between men and women. And I was immediately insulted, and it took me a few hours to understand what he was saying, that men are clueless and women are relentless. So I agreed with the female part. You know, I have three daughters. I have a wife. They are all relentless in all the most positive ways, getting stuff done. And then men are clueless. What the heck? And it took some time, and he supported his case very well. Women have to be relentless. I mean, think of our ancestors before there was any hospitalization or healthcare, before we had homes. I mean, we were living in caves or very make-do shelters, and we were barely surviving. Food was not readily available. The men would group together, probably drinking some homemade, you know, fermented product with alcohol as a byproduct in it, and they were planning the next morning's hunt, making very crude weapons. This is while they're drinking their concoctions. And, you know, I mean, very crude weapons. And they were trying to take down very large, very quick-moving animals. And I think to some degree that, and there was great risk to that. And that requires some clueless, strong denial in terms of thinking that, A, they could do it and that they could survive it. Women, on the other hand, were in the shelter or the cave, and they were micromanaging the raising of offspring. And a lot of teamwork, a lot of sharing of breast milk, and raising, you know, the duties of raising children. And it was a very well-managed, obviously a very successful kind of campaign or method of keeping us alive and keeping us growing. So again, Zig Ziglar said that. I was a little insulted, but that is one of the main differences between men and women. And I think that cluelessness, or men are clueless, women are relentless, I think that carries over to our physiology as well. But anyway, I digress. It is Women's History Month. You know, as a male, I do try and stress or force myself to maintain that perspective that women are different and that they have unique health challenges. Of course, I have a wife. I've seen her go through a lot of different challenges. We're both 65, so you know we have quite a history of seeing this. I've seen my female patients go through a lot of challenges, even very young patients, and my daughters. The oldest is 36. So I'm going to talk about fluoride, about hormones, about oral health, child rearing, how oral health can affect the offspring. And at the end of this, I am going to talk a little bit, just two questions kind of came up, and they were answered very well by a friend of mine on nanohydroxyapatite. And it kind of links into this because a lot of pregnant women are asking, can I use a nanohydroxyapatite toothpaste? So I'm going to kind of cover all of this. So a little bit hodgepodge here. Pardon me for that. But I think this is very pertinent information, even in studies. Again, I probably look at 10, 15 different studies almost every day. Today is Saturday. I've read already 4 different studies. To me, that's fun. That's kind of like Scotty the Enterprise. When he wants to go in and relax, he goes into his quarters and he reads engineering warp drive journals, that kind of thing. So sorry about the Star Trek reference. Most of you will get that. Not all of you will. Anyway, studies. Speaking of studies, most studies are geared towards the male physiology or metabolism, and that is unfortunate. However, if you look hard enough and deep enough, there are studies that include, for example, only women as participants. Those are very revealing studies because then you'll see the difference between the physiology and the course of disease in women as it is different, as it is compared to or contrasted with the progression of disease in men. And I think that's very interesting. And I think it's pertinent because we need to tailor, as a practitioner, we need to tailor our clinical approach to that gender. I think that's very, very important. And it's very apparent in oral health. So let's get into it with some specifics. I'll kind of go through a kind of a timeline. First menstruation, then birth control, puberty, maybe puberty and menstruation first, then birth control, pregnancy, menopause is a big deal. These are all things that are very important when it comes to oral health. And we'll also talk about oral health as it relates to the health of your child and transferring the oral microbiome to your child and how that relates to the incidence of decay, tooth decay that your child will have. So lots of little things, and then we'll end with the nanohydroxyapatite. Those two questions that two readers had, I want to give the answers to that because if you're pregnant, it may apply to you as well. In my practice, I have measured and treated sleep issues for thousands of patients, and one of my easy and immediate recommendations for every one of these patients is to start taking a magnesium supplement. It is well understood that magnesium improves the chances of deeper and more restorative sleep. For me personally and for my family, Magnesium Breakthrough has helped me achieve better scores for deep and REM sleep. Magnesium Breakthrough has been a game changer for my wife and I, many family members. It literally possesses a hallowed spot in our vitamin and supplement drawer. At family get-togethers, we remind each other, do you have enough? Did you bring your Mag Breakthrough? No exaggeration. Most magnesium supplements contain 1 to 2 forms of magnesium. Magnesium Breakthrough contains all 7 forms of magnesium, like nature intended. Not including all forms makes no sense when efficacy is the desired result. Not surprisingly, in today's world, 75% of the population is magnesium deficient. And unfortunately, eating well can't solve this deficiency given today's farming practices. That's why getting all 7 forms of magnesium in Magnesium Breakthrough is the ultimate way to give your body all 7 forms in one supplement. Magnesium Breakthrough helps you sleep better. It also helps calm your mind and allows you to feel grounded and relaxed during the day, and especially before bed, preparing you for a good night's sleep. Getting the correct amount and versions of magnesium, as found in Magnesium Breakthrough, also helps improve digestion, supports muscle recovery, and supports healthy bone density and even tooth remineralization. So make sure you are not only taking magnesium, make sure you are getting all forms of magnesium, which ultimately is what our bodies need to function optimally. For an exclusive offer for my listeners, go to magbreakthrough.com/askthedentist. Do it now. Your body and brain will thank you. Again, that's magbreakthrough.com/askthedentist, and use promo code askthedentist, all one word, during checkout to save 10%. Restorative sleep is perhaps the most important factor in living a life well lived. Don't let the quality of your magnesium supplement be anything less than the best it can be. Let's start with menstruation. A very common occurrence in my practice was a question from young women. They would come in, and most of them didn't tie it to the menses cycle. Some did, but they would complain about the very free margin of the gum. That's the very edge of the gum as it meets the tooth. There would be a very kind of a fine line of redness and some bleeding. And when they floss, they would notice this. It was not in all areas. It was in specific areas around certain teeth. And then it would go away. And it would happen about once a month. Sometimes they would say it was every 2 months, but it was actually happening every month. They just weren't aware of it. And that is due to female hormones. I never got that complaint from men, unless they had full-on gum disease. That has a totally different etiology, and it's not as specific and as mild and as episodic. So again, menstruation, it starts then. That's when the increase in progesterone occurs. And these are hormonal changes that women experience. And the menstrual cycle begins at a certain age. Unfortunately, I think it's beginning earlier with modern women for a variety of reasons. But some women, I would say most women, experience oral changes during menstruation that includes this, what I just mentioned, this bright red swollen gums. They can also have swollen salivary glands. That can be a firmness as they palpate underneath their chin. A lot of women are putting on makeup and using facial creams. So they're very aware of changes in their facial structure. Also, development of canker sores, that goes way up. There is an effect on that increase in progesterone on the thin, fragile lining of the oral mucosa, bleeding gums. And this, what's interesting, and what for me is a differential as a clinician, is that this menstruation gingivitis, you can call it, it usually occurs about a week to a few days before the start of the period. And then, of course, it clears up shortly after the period has started. And so having known this and seen this and recognized this probably 30, 35 years ago, over the decades and following up with patients and getting to know them and knowing them for a long time, they actually were, and they would tell me this, they would use that early bleeding of the gums or just seeing a little irritation or just a slight soreness in a certain area. And for some reason, it was always around the premolar region, not always. The majority of the cases were around the premolar regions, not the anterior teeth, not the posterior teeth. Why that is, I do not know, but it was very, very predictable. But these women would, after having discussed it with them and telling them that it was due to progesterone, elevated progesterone, and that they would see it before their period began, they reliably would use this as an early indicator for getting their period, which is very handy for a woman. Having done lots of road trips with my three daughters and my wife, this was something that we all practiced, and it became very handy. Another handy aspect of female physiology is that women are living together under the same household or this in the same cave, their menses period tends to sync up. So on those road trips, it was either all or none, and I thought that was very convenient. Anyway, again, I digress. So that is something that you should look for. If you are menstruating and you see this happening, you're wondering what is going on, that's what that's all about. It is just a slight increase in progesterone. You'll see it before you get the symptoms that most women refer to of pregnancy, certainly bleeding, and it's a great indicator. There are trackers out there that are able to give you early warning of menstruation. For example, the Oura Ring, I think, was one of the first that did that. They're not looking at your gums, but they're looking at something that is related to a mechanism that is related to the incidence of inflammation in those areas. Why it happens around the premolars, again, I have no idea. That would be fascinating to hear back from other practitioners if they have any idea what that mechanism is all about. Let's talk about puberty and birth control. Obviously, menstruation starts after puberty sets in. This is a surge in production of the female hormones, again, estrogen and progesterone. And it leads to an increase in blood flow to the gums. And again, this is related to what we were just talking about with menstruation. And I think when a lot of women go through that change, they're young women, of course, there's a lot going on. It's a sudden shock and for many. And I remember when my daughters started menstruating first, and, you know, we tried to make it a very positive thing. And I think it was an appropriate age for them. Of course, we were very careful with hormones, BGH and milk, and we were aware that this could be a problem. So around 12, 13 years old, there are changes to the gums as well. And it's also a change in how the gum tissue reacts to irritants and plaque and biofilm. So again, good oral hygiene is important during this period of time. A lot of women, when they start puberty or during their first trimester or last trimester, we'll talk a little bit about that, they can suffer from NUG. It used to be called ANUG, acute necrotizing ulcerative gingivitis, and other conditions, a very severe form of sloughing of the tissue in the mouth, very painful, debilitating, again, related to these changes in increase in blood flow due to estrogen and progesterone, typically around the menstrual cycle, but also very common during pregnancy. And this, of course, causes the gum tissue to become red, tender, swollen, and it is more likely to bleed, what we call bleeding upon provocation. It's not a cut on the gum. It could be an ulceration, which can bleed, but it's typically just more blood to the gums. And when you floss and brush, you will experience this. So birth control, I'll touch on that. Shortly after puberty, I mean, 4, 5, 6 years later, a woman will consider birth control, and this also affects the hormonal status and levels. And women who take certain birth control pills, and if you have issues with birth control pills, and I've seen this with my patients with the care of a good MD, there's a lot of bleeding and a lot of oral manifestations, bleeding certainly, inflammation, bad breath, but also canker sores. There are many different versions of birth control, and finding the one that works best for you can solve that oral manifestation. But anyway, women who take birth control pills, obviously it contains progesterone. This also increases the level of that hormone in the body. Again, it's almost like being pregnant or experiencing puberty for the first time or menstruation for the first time. They're going to experience inflamed gum tissues and that leading edge of the gum tissue, because it's very thin and has a very small blood supply, that's where it starts. And if it's not dealt with in a short period of time, in other words, if it's allowed to continue for a long time, that woman will experience gum recession. The small microvasculature cannot withstand that high blood pressure or that increased edema, erythema is another word for it, or inflammation, essentially, which means more blood to the area. Those little blood vessels blow out, and that tissue necroses, and it's very difficult to get that tissue back. You would have to go in for gum surgery. So a lot of gum recession for women occurs during pregnancy. It will occur during severe menstruation or because of taking birth control. Again, this can all be dealt with properly. It doesn't mean you shouldn't take birth control. Birth control is very controversial. I'm not going to get into that aspect of it. It does change your hormonal makeup as a woman, and it does have implications to oral health. But make sure you're on the right dose and you have a good physician that is helping you with, you know, dealing with this. And then also work with your dentist. Your dentist should be pointing things out, and you should tell your dentist that you are on birth control. This is a very important thing. I know a lot of young women don't like talking about it, but it should be mentioned to your dentist for a variety of reasons. Certainly hygiene and all that. Maybe mention it to your hygienist. That would be easier. Anyway, yeah, it's the biofilm is going to have an exaggerated reaction to the toxins that are in plaque. And so again, good oral hygiene during use of birth control or during your period is key. And again, talk to your dentist about this. There are lots of little tricks and methods that you can use that will help a lot. Stay away from mouthwash that tries to disinfect your mouth. That'll just make things worse. Okay, so that's birth control, puberty. Let's now talk about pregnancy. This is a bigger topic. All right, we see another increased level of progesterone. We're talking about pregnancy. Although it has a different rate of progression and the levels are a little higher and they vary a lot based on trimester. These changes, of course, can lead to the gingivitis that we talked about, those little areas of bleeding, but it tends to be more broad. In fact, we have a term for it. It's called pregnancy gingivitis, a lot like gestational diabetes. It's a form of gum disease that is related to your pregnancy and the elevated levels of progesterone. So what, obviously, the best thing to do would be to come in, even before you conceive, it would be best to have optimal oral health. So the advice I would give now is, if you're thinking about having children, make sure you have many years, at least many, many months of good dental care and good advice before conception. And then try and take a break from the time that you are pregnant to maybe the last trimester, if necessary. Some women can get through that until the baby's born. No dental treatment at all. Some dentists will get upset at that. They will say that middle trimester is fine for dental treatment. A lot of women need dental treatment, obviously. They have fillings, even root canals, extractions. Unfortunately, pregnancy is not always planned. So I understand that that's difficult to plan ahead like that. But again, I'm a little paranoid about things. I'm a paranoid provider. I'm a paranoid patient. I'm always trying to look at what is best case scenario. And there are issues. There are reasons why we don't want to treat in the first and last trimester. We're using anesthesia. We are causing bacteremias. Every time we go poking around in the mouth, these bacteria get loose and they get into the bloodstream and they can cross over the placental barrier and get to the little baby. So again, before you have any dental treatment during pregnancy, really think it out. And hopefully you're in a position where you won't need anything. So, but regular cleanings and excellent gum health, no form of gum disease, even gingivitis before pregnancy is ideal. If you have it during your pregnancy, address it. Make sure it's being addressed properly. Make sure you're not spending too much time in the dental chair. Make sure you shift and move around. There are all sorts of considerations that a well-trained hygienist will inform you of. Typically, most hygienists are women. I think that's a good thing because they are more in tune with pregnancy during, well, they're more in tune to treatment during pregnancy, periods of pregnancy, and they will be watching out for you. Not to say that your dentist won't, but you'll find the right information online. I'll provide a link of pregnancy and dental care from our website. But make sure you're seeing, if your dentist in your dental office, Or let's say you call in and you say, oh, I'm in my early trimester, but I've got a toothache. And they say, oh, come on in, we can do work. And be very careful. Make sure that you are getting good treatment. Obviously, no x-rays, if at all possible. And try and do all of your treatment in the middle trimester. But again, this increased level of progesterone is going to cause more aggressive gum disease. Pregnancy, gingivitis. I think I mentioned it earlier. I can't tell you how many women I've seen suffer in that third trimester, weeks before birth, with open sores in their mouth. And there's not much we can do unless you want us to use very strong cytotoxic mouthwashes or prednisone. There's some women that actually need prednisone to take down that burning. They can barely swallow. They can't eat. They can't drink beverages. Not the best time to be that sick, unfortunately. And it's really so painful to watch. It's difficult enough to be pregnant, but to have oral manifestations such as necrotizing ulcerative gingivitis, it can even get into the throat, back of the soft palate, nasopharynx, that's past the soft palate. This is not how you want to go through pregnancy. So again, prevention is the key there. Let's talk about menopause. I'm kind of going through the stages here. I just have to say, as a male, and I know men go through menopause, but it's nothing like what women go through. The needs of women, the healthcare needs and the differences, to me, I'm always very surprised that there are those differences. And I think women are more specialized than men. I mean, there's so much weighing on women to I mean, you are built, don't take this the wrong way, please, if you're a woman, but you are physiologically designed to bear children. And it makes, I don't want to say I feel bad. I feel a little helpless. I guess that's what I want to say. I feel helpless that as a man, and I've felt this with my daughters, one daughter has had two kids. I felt helpless with my wife, one miscarriage, three actual births. It's really very, it's, again, I don't want you to feel sorry for me being a man. I'm just saying that we are clueless. There's that word again, clueless. Men are clueless. Anyway, menopause, very interesting. I've seen women go through menopause, many of my patients and my wife. Again, very, very cruel for some women. After all that work, raising children, giving birth to them, dealing with increased incidence of gum disease because they have hormones that allow them to become pregnant and carry children, it seems very unfair. But again, hormonal replacement therapy has come a long way. You do have to see the right physician for that. In the old days, it had a very bad, bad reputation. It was because many reasons, I won't get into it, but the source of the hormones, where it was coming from, was literally coming from horses. There are more synthetic versions now. We can meter it out in a better way. We can soften that blow. There are many great podcast in this. I recommend a Dr. Atiyah episode. I will try and put that in the show notes. Consider that. But anyway, menopause brings its challenges, oral challenges and changes. Obviously, that can occur. And again, this has to do with certain hormones decreasing in levels. Numerous oral changes can occur as a consequence of advanced age. That goes for men as well, but it's more severe in women. So these oral changes can include altered taste, burning sensations in the mouth, greater sensitivity to hot and cold foods and beverages, a decreased saliva flow is greatly reduced during menopause, which results in a dry mouth. A lot of my postmenopausal women, even perimenopausal women, are having issues swallowing food. Bad breath, halitosis, oral microbiome dysbiosis, increase in the rate of decay, tooth decay, root decay is very common during this period of time. Again, make sure you have a good dentist. Make sure you are ready for this and that you are doing things to prevent this from happening. Hormonal replacement therapy would be one aspect of it. That's not in the realm of your dentist, but that would be kind of the overall way of helping you, you know, address or prepare for this time of life. But certainly there are a lot of things that your dentist can recommend. Certain types of toothpaste, certain dietary changes, mouth taping, making sure artificial saliva. These are all things to help increase or maintain the amount of saliva that you have and to make sure that you don't get these low pH moments in the mouth. So a lot can be done there. Talk to your dentist about that. If you think you're going through menopause, get on it right away. Mention it to your physician. Go get treated. Hormonal replacement therapy has to happen early. You can't just do it after the fact. And certainly mention it to your hygienist and to your dentist. There are a lot of things we will be looking for, like this dry mouth, gum disease, tooth decay, all of these things, bad breath. The decline in estrogen that occurs with menopause, it also puts women at greater risk for a loss of bone density. Most of us know that loss of bone, specifically in the jaw, is also an issue. It can lead to tooth loss. And then again, what I mentioned earlier, receding gums, which leads to tooth sensitivity. Remember, when your gums recede, the bone around the tooth has receded as well. It's the bone that supports that tooth. And if you have a lot of receding gums, that means you're also losing bone support of that tooth. And that also can be a sign of bone loss in the jawbone. So make sure your dentist and you are working on this and that you are on it before, as you're perimenopausal. One question I have in my office forum for women, we have two forms, one for younger women, one for older women. The latter has a question, when did your mother experience, or your sister, sorry, your aunt, at what age did they experience menopause? A lot of that is genetic. It's important to know this and be ready for it. Being ready for something is so much more, it leads to a more successful outcome than reacting to it after the fact. Again, it's that treating in the prodromal phase of a disease. In other words, no symptoms have appeared yet, but you're ready for it and you're doing things to prevent it or softening the blow of that condition. Menopause is a perfect example. Receding gums also expose more of the tooth, which leads to root decay. I think I mentioned that earlier. I know a lot of young women, before they get to college, they're on birth control, they have a dry mouth, a lot of bleeding gums, they've had gum recession from age 12, 13, up until age 18, and they already are showing signs of root decay. Root decay is much more aggressive and occurs a lot quicker than decay in enamel. If the roots are exposed, you can overbrush them, you can ditch them, or what's the word? Not ditch, kind of groove them. You can create this little wear groove in the side of the tooth, and it also it makes it more susceptible to decay. Dentin, which is the root structure of tooth, is only 50% calcified, and it's a lot more porous, and decay occurs in dentin at a much higher rate than in enamel. Next, let's cover, I'm going to just sum up with some solutions, overall recommendations. Then I'll talk about the nanohydroxyapatite questions. That'll go quick. But let me also talk about one other thing that I didn't really quite focus on, and that is this growing body of research that has confirmed that severe gum disease increases the likelihood of preterm birth and low birth weight. So we've known this for quite some time now. This is not new information. It is important information. And again, I mentioned earlier that it is best before conception to make sure that you've had your oral microbiome tested. That would be with the Bristol test. I'll put a link into the show notes for that, that you have been seeing a dentist on a regular basis. There's no sign of any bleeding other than maybe a menstrual episode where there is some inflammation, but that you're healthy, that there is no active gum disease. It starts with gingivitis, chronic gingivitis that you have week in, week after week, bleeding gums, when you spit into the sink, when you floss, if they're tender, or if you can see color changes. The normal color of gums tend to be a very light, what we call coral pink. It is a very light pink, just a hint of pink. If there's any redness or a deeper shade of pink, like Barbie pink, that is a sign of inflammation. And that's something you have to be wary of and you need to address. So you need to have the right healthcare habits, the right diet. There are a lot of ways of dealing with that. Certainly seeing your dentist on a regular basis, asking the right questions, maybe getting more frequent cleanings and having impeccable home care. And certainly, you know, flossing is very, very important in this regard. I recommend the Slate Flosser. I'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. That can make a huge difference in terms of your pregnancy. I'm not saying that to sell more Slate Flossers. I am saying that because it is true. It is more than flossing. If you use a Slate Flosser over regular floss, in my humble opinion, having read lots of studies and seen this in patients, it can actually help with the outcome of the birth of your child. I do not say that lightly at all. In any case, it is important to understand that, you know, to prevent preterm birth and a low birth weight, and again, I'm going to include studies. There probably will be about 7 or 8 links to studies in this episode. And I recommend you read them, at least the abstract notes or the first paragraph, just to get a feel for how this connects, how female health issues, women's health issues, certainly when it comes to pregnancy, menstruation, hormonal changes, are all very intimately connected with oral health. So very, very important. Some recommendations. If you're pregnant, chew gum. Chew xylitol gum. Chew xylitol gum after you give birth and keep chewing it twice a day. I have an episode on that. Try and remember. I'm going to start taking some notes here myself. There's an episode on that. I want to say it's about 4 or 5 episodes ago. We talk about how xylitol gum is key in preventing decay in your child's tooth. So in your child's teeth. Very, very important, delayed and a sustained effect. If mom is chewing xylitol gum, when those teeth erupt in your kid, there is it depends on the study, between a 64% and 91% lesser incidence or rate of decay in your children. Totally worth doing. It's good for the oral microbiome while you're pregnant. It keeps things moist, keeps saliva flow going. I would chew gum during menstrual weeks. I think that's going to help a lot too. Certainly chew a lot of xylitol gum if you have menopause and your mouth is dry. Chew a little gum before you go to bed. This is a xylitol gum. The studies that we've talked about in previous episodes literally will refer to six to 10 milligrams per day. There's a floss I recommend that can put out that amount, that can give you that dosage. It's called PPL. It's a very natural, very clean gum. Again, I was never a big gum chewer until I came across all this data, and it's not recent data. And now I choose xylitol gum. I recommend it as a woman, especially. Eat well, obviously. Supplements, the big ones, if you're pregnant, are K2, A, and D3. And here's very important, lots of fish oil. Whether it's, I recommend cod liver oil, fermented cod liver oil. Try and get the triglyceride versions. There's some data now that says the uptake is better. It's optimal. And then make sure you're getting a lot of protein. I'll let you discuss that with your physician, but on how much protein you should be taking in. But while you're pregnant, protein is key. Oral hygiene, flossing, brushing, we've talked about that. Stay away from mouthwash. It doesn't help, but if you're using the wrong mouthwash, which most mouthwash is, you're actually doing some harm. You're preventing your body, your mouth, from producing nitric oxide, which is wonderful for vasodilation, which certainly has some benefit to the fetus and to blood flow to the fetus. Very, very important. And then lastly, in this category, stay away from fluoride. I've talked a lot about that. I don't think I need to go too much into it. But as a pregnant woman, and as a mom, and when your kid is taking in water, your tap water, or if they're on formula, they are ingesting fluoride, and fluoride will damage and prevent your child's brain from developing to its full potential. That's all I'm going to say about that. There are plenty of studies. There's a lawsuit against the EPA that still there's no decision on. Very, very important to get rid of fluoride in this whole scenario of raising children. One point you may not be aware of is that in your last trimester, again, the dose is what's being considered right now in this lawsuit. They're going back and forth on what is a dangerous dose. It's come to that now because both sides, the defendant and the plaintiff, both agree, all the experts agree, that fluoride is damaging to the brain. Now they're just talking about what is the dose of the poison, or what dose makes it a poison. To me, that seems silly because there is no benefit to fluoride in water. There is some benefit to teeth with fluoride in toothpaste, but drinking it really doesn't help us at all, and we're ingesting it, and here we are bickering about what is the right dose. We didn't do that with lead. We went to zero on that. We did that with asbestos. We went to zero on that. There is no safe exposure. But anyway, again, I digress. I apologize. But stay away from fluoride. One last point on fluoride. I just can't stay away from it, can I? In that last trimester, and this goes back to dose, you may be ingesting some tap water that has fluoride in it. And then all the studies on this topic are measuring the urine content of fluoride in mom's urine. And they're elevated. They're more than what's in the water. And the explanation for that could be that in that last trimester, your hormones are pulling a lot of calcium out of your long bones to give the child enough calcium for growing their skeletal system. But in your bones, that's where lead and fluoride is stored. So if you've ingested a lot of fluoride water, realize that fluoride is getting to your child. I don't want to scare you. We don't know if that's significant, but don't ingest water with fluoride in it. Your child's already getting fluoride. If you were raised without fluoride, that's a great thing. You won't be doing that in your last trimester. Lead is another issue, of course. That's where these things collect in our long bones. And mom does give up some calcium from her bones. We give up calcium in our bones every day, whether you're pregnant or not. And that's the calcium metabolism. That is our storage for calcium. Calcium is almost as important as blood glucose, and it's highly regulated. And we need calcium for cellular processes, and we need the right amount. And calcium is being stored and pulled from bone all the time. Very important. But what else? Dental visits. Very important as a woman. And again, Women are our best patients. Again, remember, men are clueless and women are relentless. Women are our best patients. They come more frequently, they listen to our advice, and they are very consistent with good home care. So as a woman, live up to that expectation as a woman. It will benefit you greatly. I'm not saying that men don't need that dental care. We do. I'm just saying that men aren't aware of how important good dental visits are as much as women are. Lastly, I want to throw this in there, mouth breathing. If you're a woman who has these elevated levels of progesterone or lower levels of estrogen, depends on whether it's menopause or you're having your period, mouth breathing will dry the mouth. Saliva is key to the oral microbiome, the health of the oral microbiome. The health of the oral microbiome is key to combating oral disease. So saliva consistency and health, you know, we've talked about ionic integrity, the amount of minerals in saliva. A dry mouth does not work well for oral health. If you don't want to get cavities, perhaps during pregnancy, a lot of women start snoring during pregnancy, their mouth falls open. Try and become a good mouth taper. If you can't nose breathe before pregnancy, try and address that. Mouth breathing will make your life very difficult when it comes to oral disease, and it could flare up during pregnancy, even if you're a very thin, healthy, fit woman. Anyway, I think I'm going to end it there for Women's History Month. I hope that was of some help. Again, I feel a little helpless, clueless as a man addressing this, but I did want to give you the knowledge I have clinically based on the studies I've read, because I think it's very, very important. This is a shout out to all the women in my life. Love you all. And I think I understand as best as I can what you've gone through, what you are going through, what you will go through as a woman when it comes to oral health. I hope this is of some help to you in all of that. All right. One last real quick answer to some questions. I'm tagging it on here because a lot of pregnant women ask about the safety of nanohydroxyapatite. Many of you, as you've heard me say, it's a wonderful replacement and remineralizing agent to fluoride. You just heard me say horrible things about fluoride if you're pregnant, if you're planning on having children, and if when your children are developing and growing, you want to keep them away from fluoride. So what do you do? What ingredient do you recommend in toothpaste? Let's say your kids are getting a lot of cavities. You do need to make sure that this is one aspect of it. Obviously, good diet, dry mouth. These are all things that can contribute to decay. But you do want a remineralizing agent that is pulled in quickly by the tooth when it's trying to remineralize itself and fix itself. So again, we've talked about all that. Let me just focus on some questions that were asked recently and a reply from David Lin. He's a PhD at Bristol. He's the Chief Scientific Officer at Bristol. And I just wanted to, again, shout out to David for his replies. Again, David never says a lot, but boy, when he says it, it's all factual and based on studies. So again, this will help us answer the question about the safety of nanohydroxyapatite. So the questions were, there were two questions. One was, I'm concerned about nanoparticles because they affect the gut in negative ways, and the gut is critical for overall health. Yes, that is true. They listed two studies. I'm going to list the studies for you if you would like on that brings this up, and you can read them if you want, but here's the answer. David answers that both of the reviews you provide focus on nanoparticles composed of titanium dioxide, silver, silicon, and others that are primarily used as food additives. They're also not digestible. Calcium dissolves in the stomach, in the mouth, in the presence of saliva. In the case of nanohydroxyapatite, many studies have shown that nanohydroxyapatite has little to no systemic effects. The lack of systemic effects are due to its inability to cross the epithelial barrier, like the oral mucosa. Fluoride does pass through your cheek into the bloodstream or through the gums. And he lists two studies here. I'll put those in as well. And its ability to pass the gastric barrier, where it is readily dissolved. It is digestible. Titanium dioxide is not digestible. Silver is not digestible. It's a metal. The SCCS, again, I've talked a lot about them. This is a committee in Europe, scientific committee. They are not biased in any way by corporations. They're not on anyone's payroll. They have concluded, it took them 6 years, of looking at all nanoparticles. And unfortunately, nanohydroxyapatite was included with all the other metals and other ingredients. And they concluded in their safety assessment, which we have on our website. I'll put a link in for that as well. I hope I remember all this. HAP nano is completely degraded in the stomach fluid after 7.5 minutes of a digestion. That's a quote. It would not become systemically available through this path. Another question from a person, it was, in addition, nanohydroxyapatite particles have been shown to damage human renal proximal tubular epithelial cells. That is the kidney. The kidney is very sensitive, has a very, very, again, that microvasculature, it's a filter, certain things can damage it. David's reply to that is the study cited is done in vitro on an immortalized cancer cell line with a rapid doubling time, which is a major weakness in assessing biological effects of compounds on cellular health. The concentrations tested, they were very low, what is this, 63 micrograms per milliliter, are also not biologically relevant, especially given that nanohydroxyapatite is not systemically bioavailable, especially in the kidneys, as demonstrated above in that study. So again, I love these answers because it's a researcher. He understands how this research is done. A lot of those studies are older. And again, the SCCS has looked at all this data. I think a lot of people on the web see older data, or they don't think that the scientists have considered all the data. They have considered all this data. They've put everything together. They've had roundtable conversations. They've looked at other research. They've actually initiated new research, and they had to go through and remove all the nanoparticles that they felt were dangerous, and only nanohydroxyapatite. Again, different applications, but they grouped them all together because it was a nanoparticle. So make sure, if you're worried about a nanohydroxyapatite particle in your toothpaste, make sure it is a product that is approved by the SCCS. As far as I know, and as from the date of the recording of this episode, there is only one version that has passed that safety regulation. It's based on the size of the nanoparticle, the shape of it, and the concentration. It is the Fluid Inova product out of Portugal. It's called Nanoxim, and it is available in many different toothpastes here in the U.S. So anyway, David, thank you so much for that moment of reason and matter of factness, way more than that, obviously, scientific matter of factness. And enough is enough. There are a lot of people out there still saying that nanohydroxyapatite has been banned. It has in Europe. It has never been banned. It was put on a list in 2016 of products that were being examined to see if they were safe in skin products and in toothpaste. And only nanohydroxyapatite made it out of there. Again, it's digestible, it's calcium, it dissolves. And so to say that it is banned currently and that it is unsafe is very, very, it is a bunch of malarkey and misinformation. And unfortunately, we're doing a lot of harm to a lot of people that need this for a lower rate of decay and better oral health. Again, this stuff is available, it's safe, and it's been around for 50 years in Japan. We would have heard something by now. Anyway, I'm gonna go do my clueless man thing, sharpen up an arrowhead, go out, find a big woolly mammoth, bring it home for the brood, and I will see you in the next episode. Again, you're hearing all this from a clueless man. I hope I did not say anything too negative or degrading in any way. Again, I'm very sensitive about this. And if I could have a child, I would want to try and do that just so my wife didn't have to have them for our family. Anyway, hope that absolves me of anything I said in this podcast. If you are looking for a functional provider, a dentist, we have a directory. I encourage you to go to that directory and find someone who is up to speed on everything I just talked about today. Nanohydroxyapatite, the safety of it, remineralization, no use of fluoride, and how it damages the developing brain. It's easier to fix a tooth than it is a brain that hasn't developed properly. And if you're thinking the brain is plastic and can repair itself, that is not true. It has to develop to its full potential. And then as damage occurs to the brain, whether it's a concussion or something similar to that, you know, drug abuse, sickness, inflammation, poor diet, yes, the brain is plastic at that point in time. But anyway, if you're looking for someone that can help you in regard to issues and the differences between men and women when it comes to oral health, go to our directory. It's at askthedentist.com/directory. I think you'll find a lot of great information there and good providers that can help you. Again, thank you so much for listening. I hope I didn't go on too much, and I hope I was of some help to all of the women out there. And again, to women out there, and I said this to my wife the other day, thank you so much. We wouldn't be where we are today without all of you. See you in the next episode. Thanks for listening to Ask the Dentist. This is a Resonant Media production produced by Drake Peterson and mixed by Mike Fry. Drop me a line at mark@askthedentist.com. If you have any comments or suggestions, I'd love to hear them. And if you liked this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast app. Thanks for listening, and especially for taking an interest in oral health.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a dentist, doctor, or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional dental care provider, you can visit askthedentist.com/directory and search or find a dentist database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, is a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.